Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, save 50% on the new Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, February 20th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about season 3 of the Prime Video series Reacher, and we'll present interviews with its stars and the author behind the book series, Lee Child. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com. I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
Jacob, you're the biggest Reacher fan that I know. Regrettably, I have yet to see a single second of any of the Reacher seasons, but season 3 is here, and I'm so curious what you think about it, because I think, if I recall correctly, your opinion about season 2 was that it was good but not great. Is that right?
I've soured on it a bit more than that. Season 2 is pretty disappointing. Let me double back real quick. I am a big fan of the Jack Reacher books. I have read almost all of them. I trail off after Lee Child, the original author, handed the reins of the series over to his brother. The quality drop-off was steep, but the original run of books, the first 25 books, are all extremely entertaining. And the first season of Reacher, the Prime series, is a really good adaptation of those books and why I enjoy them. And Alan Ritchson, who plays Jack Reacher, is really outstanding in this part. A character who is, by design, kind of an unchanging, unwavering action hero, but he imbues him with so much charm, personality, and physicality. Like, he walks into the room and, like, the oxygen vanishes from the scene in a good way. And season 2 lost a lot of the mojo. It picked the wrong book to adapt, which is an issue I can go into if people want to hear that. But more importantly, the action wasn't as good. The storytelling wasn't as clear. It lost Lobb's focus from Reacher himself. He stopped kind of being the main character of his own show. And after season 2, I was very worried, especially since season 3 was adapted my favorite book of the whole series.
So, yeah, I do actually want to know a little bit about the adaptation choices, because you mentioned, I mean, there's 25 plus books in this show. So picking the correct source material to base a season on seems like a pretty crucial choice. What was it about season 2 and that book that they picked that you think maybe contributed to a little bit of a drop in quality there?
Yeah, for the first season, they adapted the first book, which makes perfect sense. And they adapted the 12th book for the second season. And by the time you're on 12th book of a series, you're ready for a format change. You're ready for things get shaken up. And in that book, it's about Reacher teaming up with his old army crew. Reacher himself is for those of you who don't know, Jack Reacher is a former military police officer who used to do, you know, he was the guy who was in charge of catching criminals inside the military. And now he is retired from the military, and he travels the country by bus. He's homeless, and such. Wherever he goes, he solves problems. And that's always been the appeal of most Reacher books, is that Reacher is this lone wolf, this solo guy who has the clothes on his back and nothing else, and he walks into a situation, sees people in danger, and fixes it. Usually violently, usually by breaking a lot of arms. But in 12th book, he teams up with his old crew, his old army crew, who are also all retired, all reunite to get revenge against somebody who's picking off all their friends one by one. And by the time you get to a 12th book, it's like, yeah, I'm ready to see Reacher's old friends. I'm ready to get the format change. I'm ready for the focus to be shared. But in season two of a show called Reacher, for suddenly Jack Reacher to no longer be a star of his own show and to surrounded by characters who we don't have a reason to care about yet, it felt odd. It felt weird. And it threw the show out of balance in a pretty major way pretty quickly.
Okay, so now season three is here. In your view, did the balance get reshifted back onto the good side of things? How do you think about season three now?
Oh boy, did they reshift it, Ben. They picked the right book. They picked Persuader, the seventh book, my favorite Jack Reacher book, which is literally the definition of Reacher being the center of the action. I don't want to say too much for people who haven't maybe watched the season yet, but it's very much a Jack Reacher is at the center of everything. And even he has a great supporting cast this season. Like, I really, really like the villains and the allies who are around him. But it is once again built around the just everlasting appeal of watching Alan Ritchson like enter a scene and be the most dangerous guy in the room and often the funniest guy in the room, which we'll talk about, you know, in the interviews that you'll play later half this episode. This is a terrific 8-episode season of TV. There's lots of great violent action, really incredible twists, some really entertaining villains. I mean, there are three main villains in this season. I spoke to all of them for the press day. You'll hear them soon. One of whom is, you know, a sympathetic, kind of broken villain who you're supposed to kind of like. One of whom is just the absolute nastiest, most evil, vile piece of garbage imaginable. And one of whom is essentially, what if Jack Reacher was 2 feet taller and evil? And they get to fight a lot. So it is what I wanted out of Reacher. It is a return to form to the very simple pleasures of season one. And it really pulls off what this show should be. I mean, I'm actually a pretty big fan of the Tom Cruise Jack Reacher movie, even though it really doesn't feel like a Reacher story because they have to change that character so much to fit who Tom Cruise is as an actor. Mm-hmm. So I can now safely say that seasons one and three of Reacher, more so than the Cruise movie, more so than season two for sure, really capture the very straightforward, incredibly entertaining joys of this is a 6'4" man who's smarter than you, who is going to break your arm to save that person in the room. So if that sounds like a good time for you, then yes, Reacher season three is just chef's kiss. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I think that's especially backed up by the fact that you refer to it as the Tom Cruise movie, when in fact there are two movies, and the second one is so forgettable that you probably just didn't even, you just memory hold that movie, because, man.
So that bad. That second Cruise movie is, like, rotten.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess before we get into the interviews, I just wanted to ask about, like, I mean, you sort of listed the highlights there and how you thought the show is definitely back on track now. What do you think the potential downsides might be to the season, if there are any? And then I guess as a final question, if you want to just roll right into this, what do you think about the future of this show? Do you think obviously there's a lot more source material to get through, but do you think based on season three and this course correction here that the people who make this show have learned anything from maybe that dip in season two?
Based on what season three brings, I think lessons were definitely learned. I think that people were very vocal about the reaction to season two. Like, fans were pretty unhappy overall with the overall quality of that season. So I think that going forward, you know, if they pick the right books, the ones that are just the showcases for more direct action, Reacher driving the story, I think they're in good shape. I mean, like, you asked me, like, what's weaker about this season, and I'm really thinking about it, I'm going, there was never a moment in this season where I said, oh, that was a bad episode, or that was a weak moment. I just had a really, really good time with this season. I pretty much watched it in a handful of sittings. Sorry to folks who didn't get don't have my job and have to watch it week by week. I know the first three have dropped now, so I recommend you watch the first three together because they're a great time. It just feels like perfectly calibrated, like, entertainment. I mean, there are people out there who have done deep political reads on Jack Reacher. And if you go out there, you'll find that both the right and the left have claimed Reacher as their own. In a very, and I actually asked Lee Child about that in the interview. You'll hear what he has to say about that. It's a character who is specifically built to be entertaining to watch. And now that the show is back on track, it's really hard to be mad at a show where every scene's built around what is the most fun we can have with this character in this moment. And sometimes that means him beating up a bunch of idiots in a big fight scene. Sometimes it means him being the sexiest man alive. Sometimes it means him having maybe the best scene of Reacher so far, without spoiling it, where Reacher explains why he hates lavender ice cream.
Wow, what a tease. Okay, so should we just roll right into your interview with Lee Child then, or do you want to save that one for later?
Let's roll into this one. I will say there is some spoilers for the first episode of Reacher Season 3 in our conversation, because I want to ask him about how the show adapted this particular book's, you know, initial twist, which is a really awesome, like, and a surprising twist, and works well in the book and works even maybe just as well in the show. And also, this conversation is more about the books than the show, because I realized that I'm not going to have a chance to talk to Lee Child probably ever again. So I want to talk about him as a writer and his literary output more so than the show, in which he, you know, is not really directly involved. So as a heads up, there are some minor episode one spoilers, but other than that, no real talk about the show itself. This is more about me as a fan of him as an author asking writer questions.
Cool. All right, here's Jacob's chat with Lee Child.
All right, so Persuader is my favorite Jack Reacher book, and I'll never forget the opening sequence where we learn the truth about the kidnapping and how far you bury it into the narrative. And the show maintains that, that they do a good job burying the big reveal as well. So I would love to know how you first devised the decision to bury the reveal of the kidnapping until like 100 pages in.
It was I was very conscious of taking a risk because it was a seventh book and the audience was growing all the time, which meant that each particular book, there would be a big margin of brand new readers coming to each new title. And it was a risk to conceal the truth for so long. What opinion would the new readers have of Reacher if they thought this was real? It was a risk. I remember it well. Seemed to get away with it, and it plays really well on the screen as well. I think that, I mean, obviously in terms of minutes, the reveal comes a bit quicker than it does in the book, but they carry it off really well. But that is after the first two seasons, I think that returning viewers are gonna be not too worried about it, but new viewers, yeah, they're going to face the same thing as the book readers. Is this guy okay or not?
Mm-hmm. I'll say my wife watched the episode with me, and she was very upset. She was very distressed, saying, "Why did Reacher do that?" So it still works. So in the past, you've spoken about crafting Jack Reacher initially. You set out to make a character who would be successful, a character who would sell books, and in the past, you know, 10 years, ever since I've been reading the books, I've noticed that people from all walks of life have claimed them as their own. People who have conservative experience say Jack Reacher is one of theirs. People who are liberal say Jack Reacher is theirs. I'm wondering, does it surprise you to see that Jack Reacher has essentially evolved to mean something to people who have completely divergent beliefs?
Yeah, in a way, it surprises me that he's become as widespread, because you know what show business is like. You cannot possibly predict success. It's always a lucky accident. So I'm very gratified that it spread as far as it did. In terms of the disparity of people that like Reacher, I'm not that surprised, because it's a human quality, I think, that he tries to do the right thing. And everybody tries to do the right thing if they can. Their right thing might be different than your right thing, but they're fundamentally trying to do decent behavior in their opinion. So it's a universal trait, I think, very international as well. Every culture has the same instinct to help if you can, to help somebody out. So I think the universality of it explains why you get all these different types of people liking it.
So in your short story, Second Son, it's a prequel story where we see the teenage Jack Reacher on army base in Japan. And reading that short story made me realize that, oh, Lee Child is really funny. That book has a really self-aware style to it, where Jack Reacher's having a Jack Reacher adventure even when he's a boy. And it made me realize that you are very much tuned in to the sometimes ridiculous nature of a Jack Reacher story. Do you feel that as a writer, your sense of humor is underrated?
I think, yeah, there is a lot of humor in Reacher. It's a sort of dry, sardonic humor that sometimes goes unobserved. And I think one of the strengths of the Amazon Prime series is that Alan, who really reads the books very carefully, he's noticed it and he minds it and he brings it out to the fore a lot. I'm very happy about that. But yeah, the humor, if you had a sort of word cloud thing for my reader's impressions, I think humor would not be a particularly big word, but it's definitely there. And some people notice it, some don't.
And of course, your books are known for their detailed, intense action sequences. I believe I'm paraphrasing something you said in the past about write the boring parts fast and the exciting parts slow. And I'm wondering, for people who are listening to this who want to write good action, what have you learned about penning action and pacing it after so many books? Like, is there a way in? How do you make it compelling on the page?
I think you've got to realize that you build up toward it. It is something that you are aiming for. It is a large, major scene. So you cannot duck the issue. You've got to take it head on. You've got to give it all the time, all the space that it requires. Some of the books, I remember one of them, there's a rifle shot and it's like 3 pages as the bullet travels through the air. You've got, if it's a big scene, you've got to deliver it big. That's the promise that you make, and you've got to live up to that promise.
Do you have a favorite action scene that you've written? I mean, for me, the Jack Reacher versus the truck in the field in I believe it's in Worth Dying For is for me the scene where I say this is my favorite Jack Reacher action scene. Do you have one that stands out for you?
I like that one too. That's a great one. And let's see. Yeah, there's a lot of them. I like the one in. I set myself a sort of technical challenge in one shot, which is that there was going to be the usual body count, but he was not going to actually shoot anybody with a gun. And so at one point, he crushes somebody to death in a bear hug. I like that, especially when the guy realizes what is happening.
So all the books you've written, is there one that stands out to you? You have a special fondness for, maybe not the best-selling one, maybe not the one that people bring up the most, but one where you look back at your work and say, that one's my favorite.
I like the Midnight Line from that point of view. It's about the opioid addiction issue. But I wrote it with tremendous sympathy from the addict's point of view. And Reacher is not an addict. Reacher doesn't necessarily have tremendous sympathy for that, but he's a human being and he sees another person in trouble and doesn't comment negatively at all. And so I felt that one is that it's kind of the one I'm proudest of in a way. It was a social issue handled through an action thriller that produced a lot of help to people. After what I heard, a lot of people found it helpful, and a lot of doctors actually wrote saying, thank you for treating it as a human problem rather than a criminal problem.
Yeah, that one stands out to me too because it's one of the very few problems that Reacher can't punch his way out of. It's one of the very few books where I don't want to say Reacher's helpless, but he finds himself facing a precipice that he can't scale. And it's generally upsetting as a reader to see Reacher unable to fix that.
Yeah, quite a few of the latter ones I've tried to introduce that. The one called Make Me, where it's basically the dark web-based type of things. Reacher understands he can win the battle, but he can't win the war. And that's a little dispiriting to him, and it produces a nuance. It's not clean cut. It's not total victory. It's victory today, but the problem will continue tomorrow.
So, as you've been very public about this, a few years ago you handed the books off to your brother, and he's been publishing, I think, a few of them now under his name. And I know you said that you want the transition to be smooth. You want like people to be able to continue without issues. I'm wondering, in your opinion, how has the transition gone? Have you noticed any difference in reader reaction, or do you think it's worked?
Yeah, reader reaction has been it's kind of validated the theory I had from the start, which was that I had serious discussions with my publishers from the start about leaving the author name off altogether. This is about a character. We should just call it a Jack Reacher book. And have no mention of the author because the central thing is the character himself. And so Andrew has taken over, and the reader reaction has been fairly seamless. There's always a few clever dicks who want to point out that, yeah, it's changed, but you get negative comment about anything. The amount is how many negative comments, and there's been very few, and I think it's worked very well.
Great. Well, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Congratulations on the new show, and thank you for writing so many great books.
Yeah, good to see you. Thank you for the coverage.
All right, Jacob, where do you want to go next? You got four more interviews here.
Oh, three more. Let's do Alan Ritchson and Maria Sten. This is Jack Reacher himself, played by Alan Ritchson, and Maria Sten plays Neegley, his old army friend who's now a PI, who's popped up each season to lend a hand. We only had a few minutes, so I only had, and I really couldn't ask Maria Sten much based on the first three episodes, which are available now, and he kind of wanted me to stick to that territory. So I asked her about the spinoff that they're making for her character. But you'll get to hear Alan Ritchson talk about the ice cream scene I mentioned earlier, which is in episode three of this of the first initial three that I dropped today. I also asked him about a particular stunt that I watched it and we couldn't figure out, my wife and I, is Alan Ritchson actually doing that stunt? And you'll get to hear Ritchson's answer and a story about that scene in the interview.
Okay, here's Jacob's chat with Alan Ritchson and Maria Sten.
Now, Alan, I'll start with you. I interviewed Lee Child the other day, and he said that one thing you get right that he's so glad you do is that you understand Reacher's sense of humor, and you bring how to start down sardonic comedy into the character. So I'm
Oh,
wondering,
thanks.
in addition to all the usual things, the action, the drama, I want to know how you find the comedy in Reacher and how you bring that out.
I find it usually by opening the script and reading what's on the page. I find it in the dialogue that's been written for me. I look, I gotta give credit where credit's due. Lee nailed it in the book. I'm a huge fan of the books. The books are funny to me. And Nick Santora has found a way to faithfully adapt that, which is a hard, it's really hard to do, but he's always really understood Reacher's sense of humor. And so I just have to, hit the ball that's been teed up for me. But I will say, I think there's a little twinkle in Reacher's eye where he understands when he's being funny and without being in on the joke. That's the line that I have to toe. But yeah, it's all like it's done, it's been done for me.
One of the highlights of the first three episodes is a, without going into spoilers, a scene where you enjoy or not enjoy some ice cream with another character. So
Yeah.
it's probably the funniest scene in the whole show so far. Do you remember filming that scene and
I
realizing how
remember it
funny it
really
was?
well. Yeah, I remember it vividly. Yes. That was directed by Gary Fleeter. He we had two directors this season, Gary Fleeter and Sam Hill. And Sam Hill took the lion's share of the work because the strikes really pinned us into a corner. But Gary had that episode, and it was our first time working together. And it's a really difficult scene. It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it. But when you have two characters sitting on a bench against a wall for that many minutes, it's super easy to nod off and to stop listening. And it was shot so masterfully. There's something so beautiful. It's one of my favorite scenes in the season. And it's just such a simple scene, but it's so masterfully executed. It's just it's really kind of artfully done. And I remember I actually reached out to him after I saw it because I was like, that is, it would be so easy to make that more formulaic or boring, but or overdo the cinematography so it's hyper stylish, to try to make up for the fact that you're just sitting against the wall. But he executed really well, and I was really proud to see what he pulled together for that. So it's funny that you mentioned that. It's a scene that most people will probably miss because there's so many more action-packed moments that are like, wow, Reacher just almost died. But it's a special one.
The next question's for Maria. Since I last spoke to you for season two, Prime has announced a Neegley spin-off series. I know you probably can't talk much about in terms of details, but what would be on your wish list for that show? What would you want to do to make sure it wasn't just another version of Reacher and had some identity?
I think Reacher is the spirit of Reacher, and Neely will be the spirit of Neely. So it is its own show. Yes, it's a spin-off, but it very much feels like its own thing. Of course, it'll be a sister to the mothership, as we call it. But what I really like already in reading the material is that it is its own thing, and it's grappling with Neely and her inner life and her professional life, and the things that are going on in her world in Chicago. So I think that is what really is gonna, I think, make it pop and make it unique and make it special. Like we've seen, we are living in a world of sequels and prequels and spin-offs, and I think what this is doing is really rare. And I was actually quite surprised when I read the material that it feels like it's making an original show, but it's a spin-off. And so that to me is really compelling.
Excellent. One more for Alan. In episode one, there's a scene where Jack Reacher climbs down a house, and I kept on watching the shot and realizing that it was very seemed to be very clearly your face in these various close-ups and medium shots. So I'm wondering, did you actually climb down that house, or was that a double?
No, I did it. And you know what? I hit like a rusty nail or something, and I left blood marks all over that dude's house. And I had to do it like eight more times. And they're like, "Can you stop getting blood on everything? Because it's showing, you can see blood handprints, and we're gonna have to wipe it off." And I was like, "Guys, I don't know. And you, this is your fault because there's like a razor sharp awning or something that I gotta." Yeah, dude, that was real, and I bled all over the place.
Well, thank you for solving a bet with me and my wife. She said that was Alan Ritchson. I said, no, they doubled him. So thank you. I can now put that to
That was
rest.
me, brother, all day.
All right. Thank you both. Now time. I'll appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and you got two more interviews left to go.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on myPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on myPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.
All right, which one do you want to do here, Jacob?
Let's move on to Sonia Cassidy. She plays Duffy. She's a DEA agent who recruits Reacher to help with a mission that she's working on. And I'll leave it there if people haven't watched the show yet. But she's a really terrific supporting character. A lot of the Reacher books have really terrific temporary female leads who pop in for, to offer Reacher assistance, have a romantic subplot, and then vanish before by the time the next book pops up. and season one had a really wonderful female lead played by Willa Fitzgerald. Season two kind of dropped the ball there, unfortunately, with a character who was very underwritten and underutilized. And then they got back to it here with season three. Sonia Cassidy is a lot of fun. She breaks out a great Boston accent, like, pack my car. And we talked about how she created the accent in this interview and how she stands toe-to-toe with Alan Ritchson, how she manages to act alongside a personality as big as him and be as memorable as him. So, yeah, she's a really terrific supporting character. We have an article on the site, I think, by the time you read this, about why this character works so well. So this is Sonia Cassidy.
As someone who was raised by a Massachusetts woman with a borderline stereotypical accent, I love hearing a thick Boston accent on screen since some people are so afraid of it. Can you talk about finding that accent and how you made it work for you?
Oh, thank you. I loved the challenge of taking on a Boston accent. I just watched as much as I could that had the Boston accent in it, as many films, and also like I found some lovely clips on YouTube from like the Boston Globe, like quite strong, heightened old school Boston, like when Whitey Bulger was caught, and these Boston longshoremen from the 80s who were talking about working at the docks and all this stuff, which was just such a gorgeous kind of time capsule, but was very helpful to me to take on a much stronger accent in order to kind of soften it a little with a dialect coach. But yeah, I listened to it as much as I could and drilled it. as best possible, and here we are. But it was a lovely challenge, but it was a challenge. It's a tough one.
Yeah, I know a lot of actors seem afraid of it. I think a lot of actors are always trying to underplay the Boston accents, but as someone who was literally raised in a household with, I packed my cat in the yard, I'm really happy to hear somebody who actually just goes for it, as opposed to trying to dance around it.
Yeah. No, I think the more regional accents we hear, the better. They're wonderful things. They tell you so much about a person. So, yeah.
So it's very easy for another character in any scene with Jack Reacher to get lost, literally and metaphorically, in the shadow of the guy. So I'm wondering, when you're sharing a scene with a character who is designed to be larger than life, how do you modulate performance to make sure that you're always standing toe to toe with him, and he doesn't, and like that character just can't overshadow you?
I think I just followed my gut and followed what was on the page. Like, Duffy is no shrinking violet. Mm. When we first meet her, and when she first meets Reacher, she's not particularly impressed by him. She's like in over her head at work. She's doing this case now off the books. There's so much at stake. Like, there's no airs and graces. What you see is what you get. And she just wants to know, like, who the hell are you? Why are you on my turf? And can I trust you? Could you be useful? You're pretty big. Okay, I think you could. But then we see a trust and a respect and a kind of kinship build from that. But I like the fact that she's not blown away by him to begin with, that we see that evolve over the show, because, and I think it speaks to her character. So with that in mind, I mean, she doesn't feel overshadowed by him. And so I hope that it also reads as her not being. The stakes are too high. And I think it's interesting to see someone not swoon to begin with, but actually see a kind of affection and an interest grow over the course of the show based on also who he is. I mean, so much of Reacher is like, he's a big fella, you know, you can't miss him. But Reacher, the character, for all his quirks, is in his own way very attractive. And I think that is something that Duffy finds herself warming towards very much so. So I thought that was just interesting to play with that a little more. She sees in him someone who's like in the trenches with her, who's a good teammate, who knows how to get stuff done and not buckle under pressure. That's kind of the way to her heart, I think.
It's very telling that when I watch this show with my wife, she's very drawn to the action, but she loves that Reacher is attractive, and she loves that she's always with women who are strong and capable, and she's a big romance fan. And can you talk about like the importance of romance in these shows, and why people who come for the action may be drawn to the elements that are just as strong, like these two falling for each other, even if it's temporary?
Yeah, I mean, what I love about the show is also so much of the action is done so well. The stunt team is amazing, but I think it's a testament to the show that it does allow those moments of quiet when the camera is just sat with two people. That is the stuff that also gets your heart racing, hopefully, just as much as, if it's done right, just as much as the scene where two giant men are beating the crap out of each other. I think it only enriches the show. It's a wonderful thing to see people try and impact each other beyond the physical, to see two minds meeting. It's very delicious in a different way. And so, and also I think with Reacher, with a character that we're with now over hopefully many more seasons, who is so interesting, we learn more about him and who he is in those quieter moments when he's interacting with other people, whether that's someone he falls for a time or forms another working relationship. So I like that the show has that.
Was there a scene, I mean, we'll keep it spoiler free here, a scene that in retrospect was the toughest and most rewarding to shoot? Like, now it's all things wrapped up and ready to premiere. Is there a moment you look back and go, oh man, that was really hard, but I'm glad we pulled it off?
Yeah, there's a couple. One was a particular fight scene. If this is pre-spoilering, there's a fight scene on a boat and there's like flames. And that was, I'd never done a fight like that before. So it felt like genuinely pretty hairy to do. I mean, everything was so like technically set up and safe and all contingencies were put in. But, you know, when the camera's rolling, I'm a normal person. I don't I'm not a DEA agent fighting someone on a flaming boat every day. And so it's both really cool and also like you have to keep that other part of your brain that is an actor that's focused on like don't fall into flames or throw your other actor into flames. So that's always a really fun challenge. And just doing the fights over and over again, even if it's a short fight, you're doing it take after take from loads of different angles. It gets like really knackering after a time, just doing the same moves. And you have to bring 100% and be focused and ready. And in a very different way, one of the last things we shot was like a 3.5-page oneer. So just all dialogue, no action. But they are so much fun to do on camera because it's kind of like doing theater again. But you are so profoundly aware of not messing up because you've got a guy with a steady cam, a very heavy steady cam, and you're weaving through the streets and there's SAs coming and going. Like there's so many moving parts. You do have in the back of your mind, like, don't be the person that messes this up. Don't be the person that messes this up. So in a different way, the stakes feel very high. And one of the last things we shot is one of the first things you see in the show of Duffy basically giving Reacher the update as to what she's doing and why. But yeah, 3.5 pages on screen is a whole stunt in and of itself as well. So that was good fun.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much, and I hope the rest of the day goes great.
And then finally, Jacob, you have a trio paired together. You have Anthony Michael Hall, Brian T., and Olivier Richters. Tell me about that.
Yeah, these are the three villains, the three main villains of the season. Anthony Michael Hall playing a mysterious businessman who may or may not be what he seems. Brian T. playing a dark figure from Reacher's past. And Olivier Richters playing Polly, the 7-foot-tall, like 400-pound dangerous madman who Reacher has to face down during the season. We only had a few minutes, so I want to ask each of them one question. Here are the three villains from Reacher season 3, all very different actors playing very different characters. So it was fun to see them all together here.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, so I'll start with Anthony. Anthony, your character is in a series where the hero never changes. I feel like your character is the one who has to change this season. You're the one who's going on a journey. So I wonder, how do you approach a villain who's an underdog, who has to be sympathetic compared to the others, but still has to be a threat to our heroes?
Well, you said it right there. It was in your question, I think. There's a lot of range there, that's one of the things that's a challenge. In this situation, Nick and the great staff, I mean, all the scripts were there for us. So in preparation for this, we had everything. We all knew where we were going to wind up. But as actors, for me personally, I like to break my stuff down and then prep as much as I can and then just be prepared to deliver. Once you know the lines, then you can forget them. And I had a lot to play with. It was a lot of fun, working with these guys within our network and objective. And there's a ticking clock too because of Quinn. So that was a lot of fun, and having become a father, Libby and I both gave birth to our wives did. Let me get that right. our daughter and son respectively. So at 55 to become an old dad, it was a great thing, but it was also inspirational too. Cause now I could really connect with, what it would be like, having a 20-year-old son. I learned a great note years ago as an actor, any thought you have about anyone you're working with, it's good to give it to your character. So, I made some new friendships here. These are great guys to work with. Sonia as well. It was a great crew. And you save things for the lens and just kind of express yourself there. So I had a wonderful opportunity here and a great role. So I appreciated it.
Right. This question is for Olivier. Readers of the Jack Reacher books have been excited to see Polly brought to life for years. He's one of the scariest characters in those books. So knowing that your number one goal is to make Jack Reacher look smaller and weaker than you, how do you prepare for that, not only physically, but mentally? What was your process to get yourself in the headspace for this character?
Reading the book first, I discovered he was even more sick in the book than the script. So I spoke to everyone. I had to bring him down one notch, else I think it's not for 240 countries available. The physical part, I had to be as big as possible. I was 155 kilos, I went to 160. I did 4 months of stunt training to be physically prepared for it. And I have a great acting coach, and we got every scene down. And with that, preparing myself so well, I went into the scenes. And what I loved about playing with Alan is that there was enough time to adjust the scenes a little bit from the script to make it work even better. And I think with the gym scene, you can see the irritations coming up, and we see that in the trailers, there's going to be an end battle. I think we really pulled it off, like in the book, Polly versus Reacher, Titan versus Titan.
Not going into spoilers, is there a scene or a moment that that was benefited from in the moment? You said some things got improved when you were on the set. Like, was there a moment or a shot or a sequence that where you figured out something that was much better that you guys loved?
Well, for instance, in episode one, I think it got released, so it's not a real spoiler. The first time we meet at the gate and Reacher gets out of the car, that scene, he does in the book, he doesn't get out of the car. So I have no interpretation, like, what is the first time reaction of Polly meeting Reacher? And it was a big question. Is he intimidated or just like me, a down-to-earth giant and not scared of anyone? And we had to figure it out on set what works best. So we actually did both of them, me not being scared or a little bit intimidated by Reacher. And I'm curious which one they took. So that's even, so that's the things that we discussed on set and still had to figure out.
This question's for Brian. You're playing a character who is described by everybody who knows him as the epitome of evil. But the way you play him, he's almost casual. We don't get, there's none of the cackling, none of the big boasting you see from characters who may be associated with that, with those words in other movies and shows. Can you talk about like eliminating the showboat elements to make him scarier? Can you talk about the choice to go a little more like low-key for this character?
Yeah, I think there's a trap to somehow play these bad guy cliches, right? And especially in a show in this kind of archetype. But what we all love about Reacher is that it's so incredibly grounded. And I think every villain needs to be that. And when you come in and try to outwit or outsmart a foe such as Reacher, you got to come in with a really believable, grounded kind of root. And that's where I started from. And, you know, Quinn is a formidable foe from his past that comes back to haunt him. And what I love about it is it's not about the brawn or the bruteness of it all. It's really about the intellectual mind. Mm-hmm. And in that context, we're really trying to play chess with one another and really try to outsmart or outwit one another. And sometimes that's even a lot more scary. And to be completely honest, it's a testament to my fellow actors, right? Because when you come in with this particular type, it just doesn't play. But if you come in with this grounded sense, and then you have the reactions of what these individuals are giving, mm-hmm. right? It really elevates the villain character so much more, because if they're not, you know, in trepidation or in fear of Quinn, then it really falls flat. So it's really an ensemble. It's really a cast thing and a show development, especially from Nick Santora and Sam, the director, to really fulfill what these nemesis should be like.
Well, great. Well, that's all the time I have. Thank you all three very much. Congratulations to the new show.
All right, Jacob, any closing thoughts on the season? I know you probably can't say too much about what happens beyond episode 3, but is there anything that you can tease for folks who are excited about the show and the return of it?
If you watch the first 3 episodes and say, man, Reacher feels like it's back and I hope it stays back, the answer is, yeah, it's back throughout the whole season. This is the best action show on TV. You know, people keep calling it a dad show, and maybe it is, but you know, I find this show just ridiculously entertaining. And I oftentimes, when it comes to like, you know, male dominated shows like this, I'll ask my wife, are you enjoying it as much as I am? And she says, yes, she loves the action. She loves Alan Ritchson, and she absolutely loves the dynamic between him and Sonny Cassidy as Duffy this season. So if you're one of those people who found anything from season one, whether it was the chemistry between the characters, the sense of humor, the bloody action, and then we're let down by season two, like season three is just, they heard the complaints, and I'm really hoping that going forward, they use this season as their guiding light, because I had such a good time. The simple pleasures of the big smart man kills everybody, when done right, Ben, that's just cinema. That's just the best type of entertainment.
Man, it sounds like I might need to start watching this show, because the way that you describe it definitely seems to appeal to my particular subset of interests. So I need to get around to that. But
no, if you do not enjoy Reacher, Ben, then you're not the man I think you to be. I mean, the fact that we talked about Beekeeper on our end of the year podcast, and you like went to bat for Jason Statham, and the fact that you're the biggest Fast and Furious fan I know, I can't comprehend a world where you don't enjoy Reacher on some level.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, yeah, you can watch the first three episodes of Reacher Season 3 on Prime Video right now. Obviously, the first two seasons are there as well. And you can find more about Reacher at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes for today's episode. But yeah, we're going to have a lot of Reacher coverage on Slash Film this season, which sounds like a great pairing and great news for all. So Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tap. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.